Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Oklahoma. Yep, the Oklahoma governor signed a bill that is going to give motorists protection when they drive into those protesters. And, you know, I'm kind of looking at this going, you know, are you encouraging people to now deliberately drive into protesters? I mean, if this were to pass, would the guy from Ohio who killed Heather Heyer, would he now be a hero instead of sitting in jail? And will retroactively you let him out and make him a hero now? This is craziness, literal craziness. And here to share some thoughts on the insanity, a daughter of Oklahoma, and one of our favorite guests, our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, happy Thursday.
Happy Thursday. I don't go walking in large crowds of people, I guess, in Oklahoma now. Is that what I'm getting?
Here's the thing. Like, I really remember in 2010 when the Tea Party protests were happening and people showed up at the Capitol with long guns that were strapped to their back and they had all of their weapons with them. And it genuinely freaked me out. Like, I didn't want to be at the Capitol when that was going on. And my boss really didn't want to be there either, but you know, life is hard.
That's your job.
But I feel like that would have given me a license to run over them and be like, oh, I was scared. Cause I was, it freaked me out. I was nervous. I didn't know if they were going to shoot me because, you know, I had the wrong t-shirt on or whatever. But yeah, this was, I think this does give a license to people who, you know, you just want to run them over. The different thing about Oklahoma is that you're going to have a heck of a lot more Republican rallies and conservative rallies than you're ever going to have Black Lives Matter rallies.
Yeah.
Even the Black Lives Matter events were relatively small. There were definitely a lot of allies, and it was, you know, meaning white people. But for the most part, there were not that many people. And with these Tea Party rallies and these Trump rallies and, you know, now the gun rallies, that basically just gives license to run them all over.
And I'll tell you my first thought as someone who is a union guy, this is going to be used against workers. Mark my word, this will be something that they'll target workers with. And I know people, oh, we're going to go after those Black Lives Matter. No, this is going to come for everybody. This is bad legislation. Its intent was just to target those people. But eventually it's going to run over someone else. It's going to run over your foot.
Well, I think, too, it's basically legalized murder, right? I can't imagine that this is actually going to hold up in court.
Sarah, the stand your ground laws, those hold up in court. And to me, it's insane that I can start a fight with you. I can start a fight with you. You can whip my behind and I can shoot you because now I'm in fear of my life.
Well, but if it's something like stand your ground, if somebody is coming into your space, if you're basically driving down the street all, you know, like in your own little lane, in your own little world, and you see a bunch of union protesters with an inflatable rat on the sidewalk, and you pull over and run over all of them, how is that invading your space? You know, like, how do you make that argument? And I don't think it's going to fly.
Yeah, I see the conservatives. It's a weird thing for me because conservatives are supposed to be the law and order people, or at least they used to be the institutional people, you know, don't make radical changes. And yet they seem to be afraid of everything. And
I would say, too, like what we saw this week with the George Floyd thing, people were trying to say that Chauvin shouldn't be guilty. And it's like, because murder is okay, like, is that what you guys are talking about? This was not an open and a questionable thing. This was open and shut. This is very, very clear that he actually murdered somebody. And if, you know, the process worked, the judicial system worked, he was found guilty by a jury of his peers, and now they're like, oh, he shouldn't be convicted and going to jail. Like, but you are the law and order people.
Yeah, I go back to that. You're the law and order people. It's supposed to be those liberals who are supposed to, no, he had a bad upbringing. He had a bad childhood. Someone dropped him on his head when he was a kid, you know, something.
Yeah. And what's crazy too is that this was not an example of I mean, we talked about this before with the thing we talked about last week where, you know, they had 10 members of the Minneapolis Police Department who testified against him. People, you know, even retired folks who did the training, the actual chief testified against him. So if you want to talk about supporting the blue line, the blue line is the 10 people who testified against him. He is the outlier here. And yeah. I don't think people really understand that.
No, I mean, look, for me, it was the video. I don't know how you get past the video.
Yeah.
And I said when the verdict was to be read, I think the jurors should have sat and stared at him for 9 minutes and 29 seconds before they allowed the verdict to be read, just to see how, just to show how long that actually is.
Yeah. And I think a lot of folks, that's the thing with a lot of the demonstrations is when they were doing the kneeling for that long. You really do understand. I mean, especially if you got crappy knees.
That's
you really
me.
Do understand how long that is. But I love too that people tried to start up this whole thing about the blue flu and that officers should quit or they should call in sick and all these other things. And I was like, so you basically just want to defund yourself? Like, is that what you're saying? I don't really, it doesn't make sense to me. This whole thing, like that's the thing about the conservative on the other side of this, none of their arguments make sense. They just end up looking stupid and petty and amateurish. And it just gives me more stuff to write about to laugh at them.
And you do an incredible job doing that. I hope people will check out your work at rawstory.com. It is fabulous stuff. Speaking of the party of death, I go from Oklahoma to Tennessee. The Tennessee House passed a bill that would ban local state governments from requiring anyone to get a COVID test. And there's part of me that goes, I don't think the government should mandate you get a test, you get the vaccine. I think you just should be smart enough to get it on your own.
To some extent, I think you're right. If you're going someplace in particular, like if you want to mandate it to go into serve on a jury, to go into the state courthouse, to, you know, the county courthouse, whatever, do it that way. But doing like a blanket, you know, thing that every person in the city has to get tested seems a little too much. I get it if there is a huge outbreak that they can't exactly figure out and nobody's going to wear a mask.
Yeah. Cletus wasn't getting the vaccine anyway. And look, you know, we talked about the case from Kentucky where someone who worked at a nursing home refused to get the vaccine, brought the virus in, and a couple people died because of it. And the questions now start popping up of what do we do with the people? Because there's, you know, we've done a great job. Over 200 million of us have been vaccinated thus far or are on the way to being completely vaccinated. Now we're slowing down a little bit because now we're getting to the Trump voters and the anti-vax crowd who were never going to get it anyway, even though those six people with the Johnson & Johnson got blood clots that may have been caused. You know, what do you do with them? And this is going to be a policy problem. What do employers do? Can you let them into your workplace knowing that potentially they could spread some variant and again, make this pop back up?
That's a weird, difficult question, because then you start getting into constitutional authority over people. Because if you require that somebody has a specific vaccine for your work environment, you know, can you make that,
we do it for kids
happen?
We do it for kids going to school.
And I would say too that going back to the Hobby Lobby lawsuit about requirements for birth control, if there is some kind of out where somebody's like, well, you know, I believe my business believes in science. So how is that not the same as, you know, the radical right wing Christians that don't want to pay for your birth control pills?
That's a good point. If you want to make that religious argument, go work for, you know, one of the, you know, the Hobby Lobby or Chick-fil-A.
And I think too, like, especially with nursing homes, that is, at that point, I really think you should be able to bring up a manslaughter charge for that, because that is absolute crap. If you can't protect the people that you trust to do your nursing care, then that's just that infuriates me just thinking about it.
No, I'm right there with you.
Also, I will say too, I got the Johnson & Johnson, and my friend Joanna did.
Okay.
No blood clots.
No blood clots.
We were fine. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. You know, knock on something. No blood clots. So you're one of the, what was it? There were 6 out of 7 million. So you're one of the 6,999,994 that didn't have a blood clot. Good for you.
I'd like to think that I'm the fourth. The 6,994.
Because usually I'm usually one in a million. If there's a one in a million side effect, I usually get it. I haven't been the 1 in 7 million. So no blood clot.
Yeah.
I got the Moderna, so I'm still waiting for the miserable dose number two, which will be coming very soon.
Although I've heard, like, there was a whole article in the New York Times about how women have a harder time with it than men do. And that was certainly true for my parents. My stepdad had a much lesser time, and my mom was sick all weekend and was miserable.
Well, I know what I've got to look forward to, so I'm not looking forward to it, but it's got to get done. I want to get to the other side of this. Let's move along. Washington, D.C., the 51st state. Thoughts, since you're a resident of the state or the non-state of D.C.?
It's really sad because I kind of don't declare it because I still, all of everything that I have and like my driver's license, my tag, my taxes, like everything is still Oklahoma. And because I go back and forth and spend 6 months out of the year in Oklahoma, I can legally do that.
Right.
But a big reason for that is because DC is not a state and I'm not being represented and I'm not going to pay taxes and not be represented. I recognize, however, that makes me part of the problem because you really need people that are in the city to participate in the government to ensure that it can become a state. But the thing is that everybody in Washington, D.C. wants it to be a state. They have for decades. It's especially after what we saw on January 6th, where the mayor had no power to call in her own National Guard and had to go to Maryland and Virginia to beg them to send their guard in, have their governors deploy their guard in. The fact that they had to do that is just absurd. The other piece of it is marijuana legalization. Washington, D.C. was one of the early states to pass pot legalization, and all of our laws have to be approved by Congress. And so Congress blocked it. So all of these other states are making beaucoups of money in tax dollars selling weed, and Congress is forcing us not to, even though we've passed it, you know, in all of the ballot initiatives. So this is, I get it that it means that we're going to have more Democratic votes, and that's awesome. I'm totally for that. But I think more than anything, we are basically being singled out in a way that is proving to be problematic. Not just, I think, for us as a state, but I think also for the safety of the federal government, which has proved that it can't necessarily take care of the state.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen. So I brought it up just so I could say it's never going to happen.
I want there to be a hearing about it because I think it would be very nice to hear Republicans explain the security argument to that. What is it? You know, if you're not going to make us a state, then you need to give us control of our own guard. You need to give us control of our whatever, you know, our laws are. If they want us to be absorbed into other states, I actually would be fine with that and put the Capitol in its own little, you know, world. I also think, however, that if we do that, then the entire state of Wisconsin should be absorbed into Utah because D.C. is bigger than Wisconsin. Or not Wisconsin, Wyoming.
Wyoming. Okay.
Do it for Wyoming. So, you know, Wyoming should just go away.
There's a thought.
Make the Dakotas just one Dakota, and then the native tribes can have the entire rest of it because we stole it from them to begin with. Or I think give the good 16 territories, U.S. territories that we have, give them the opportunity that if they want to join the union as a state, do it. If they want to join as a state, be a part of a state, do that. But I think everybody, like, we need to get away from this colonial ideology of, you know, having these territories that they ultimately end up getting screwed. Look what happened to Puerto Rico during a hurricane.
They got paper towels.
Right.
What more do they want?
One roll of paper towels from the president.
No, and the reality is Republicans are not going to give up control of the Senate, because we know if you do make a lot of those territory states, if you make Washington, D.C. a state, it will be a Democratic state. You will have two Democratic senators and a Democratic representative, and that is not going to change in our lifetime, which is why it's never going to pass, because Joe Manchin is not going to do anything on the filibuster. So that was a nice bit to talk about. Hey, D.C. could be a state. It's never going to happen.
I wish. Someday.
Let's talk about fun with body cameras. You've written a couple of funny stories on fun with body cameras. Michigan cop punching a bunch of black people in the face over littering. You've got the Boston cops beating people up for just standing around. Lots of fun with body cams.
Thank goodness for body cams. Because up until that point, all you could really use is your cell phone video. And if a cop is beating the hell out of you and you're unconscious, it's really difficult to film them, it turns out. And, you know, all of that stuff is, you can FOIA that. You can do a Freedom of Information Act request and demand to see, in the case of Boston, the lawyer who did it requested 66 hours of video, of body cam video from multiple officers, and went through all 66 hours of it and found, you know, the officer who just rammed into this woman. And you can see her in the video, like her hands are up. She's doing the stand up, you know, hands up, don't shoot. And he just came right after. And apparently the cop behind him then came in and stomped on her several times and then went on and attacked a cyclist. And it was just like one after another. And that story, I mean, like somebody had to run out into the street and grab her and pull her to the side and like try and help her out and take care of her, because she was just unconscious and it was basically laying in the street because of these officers who jumped on her. In the case of the Grand Rapids, Michigan officers, the poor guy, I mean, it's just, these are so ridiculous. It seems like they're using any excuse possible to pull over somebody who's not white. And in the case of Grand Rapids, they accused him of littering, pulled him over, him and two other guys. They kept asking him to get out of the car, which is not something you usually demand of a citizen unless you're going to arrest them.
Right.
And I mean, this is part of the Jay-Z's lyrics for 99 Problems, which is what told you, you know, teaches everybody about the Fourth Amendment. And illegal searches and seizures is you don't have to get out of the car. And they're not allowed to search you unless they have a reason. And so what happened is that, you know, he wouldn't get out of the car. They came after him. He tried to get out of the passenger side, like go throughout the passenger side. They grabbed him. They then said that gave them license to go through his car, and then found weapons that they think violate felony laws in the state. So, you know, they use this excuse for littering just to, you know, throw some guy in jail, and it's ridiculous. It's,
yeah,
absurd.
It's like if you get caught with a screwdriver and a crowbar, those are criminal tools,
right?
Because you could use them to jimmy a door. That's a popular one. But you know, the thing is, none of this stuff is new. I think now we're just finally, you know, I hope, waking up to it, and maybe then having a conversation of how do we stop some of it.
And we're getting it on camera, which I think is the most important piece of it, because every man needs to see how ridiculous that this is.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every day there's something. You know, like yesterday, mm-hmm. the other day, there were two shootings. I mean, it just seems like every day. And look, the police aren't always wrong, but a lot of times they are. And as I've said before, I support the police when they're not wrong.
It seems like there are, if it's not a police shooting, it's a mass shooting. And if there's not some example of police brutality, then there's some example of somebody trying to kill somebody.
Yeah. No.
And I think if we, one of the things that I, you know, as a reporter, I'm trying to do is you take these state and community issues and elevate them so that we as a national audience see that this really is every day. This is every single day. And at some point, you really have to say enough. And for people of color, enough came, you know, 7, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. The rest of the country needs to stand up and say enough too.
No, and for me, it comes back to the gun issue. You know, I'm not a gun grabber. I believe people should have the right to protect their homes and to own a gun if they so choose. But it comes back to just the so many guns and so much around guns. In fact, you know, today, you know, not all that far from where I'm at, you know, in Allentown, there was a guy went, you know, just shot a couple people at a Wawa and then shot himself. You go, why? Nobody knows. He just, I feel like shooting people today.
Yeah. I remember a comedian several years ago did a whole thing where it's like, well, you know, if they're not going to let us do gun control, then how about we just do bullet
yeah,
control?
Chris Rock. Make each bullet like $5,000.
Or there was another comedian like, you know, 3 decades ago who said, if you're going to say that the Second Amendment gives your right to form a well-regulated militia, then guess what? You have to use a musket. Bring back the musket.
And now here's the weird thing, though. I mean, you know, we're in this moment where the gun issue is, you know, is front and center, and the NRA is broke, but their damage is still with us. I mean, they've still done enough damage. In fact, you know, I read your story that the NRA only has $2 million left.
Well, it's not that they have $2 million left. It's that they want to go after Joe Biden, and all they have is $2 million to go after him. So they're not really showing how much money they have. But that is a very, very small amount of money to them. They spent more money on the 2014 Senate race in North Carolina than, you know, one Senate race they spent more on than the $2 million to contact the entire country to attack Joe Biden. And they're doing it in ways that are completely ridiculous. Like, as a campaign person, they're targeting West Virginia, which makes no sense because Joe Manchin's already, you know, he's got an A rating with the NRA. We never expect him to be up for any kind of gun sin.
Right.
And then they're going after Maine. Well, Susan Collins was just reelected. She didn't give a damn for the next 6 years. Angus King isn't up until 2024. And that gives him, you know, a good chunk of time to be able to explain whatever vote he wants to cast to his district. The same for Montana, where Tester's not up until 2024. That's a harder vote for him, I would say. But the rest of their campaign is all, you know, going after their own members on Facebook, and then those little glossy mailer, direct mail pieces you get in the mail, sending a whole bunch of people those. Who the hell reads those anymore?
Nobody.
Like, I sit at the mailbox after I, you know, once every 3 weeks when I go to my mail, and I just chuck everything. You know, like I look and see if it's something that I actually need, or most of the time it's my neighbor's. And then you have to explain why you haven't gotten your mail for 3 weeks. But I mean, who the hell? I feel bad because you want to support the USPS, but at the same time, it's like I pay everything online. What do you want?
No. Send me all the junk mail. Send me all of your cards so I can throw them away. I think it's good for the economy. I just wish it was on recycled paper. I hope it's on recycled paper so we can put it in the recycling bin and they can recycle it and use it again. And send me some more stuff that I'm not going to pay attention to.
If there were more delivery coupons or like pizza coupons, then I'd be totally down with that. But
so,
not.
So what you're saying then, if the NRA came out with a coupon for a delivery, you would then read their ad?
No, I would use the coupon and then trash the rest of it. Unless it was a restaurant that supported the NRA, and then I'm not giving my money to that.
There you go. Okay, and finally, last bit I wanted to get to. You've got a story how the GOP's election conspiracy theories could end up hurting them in 2022. How's that going to happen?
So here's the thing. If you convince the entire Republican Party that the election is fraudulent, the next time they have to go to the polls, they're going to think, well, the election's going to be rigged anyway, so why the hell do I vote? And this is what we saw. I feel like part of this is what we saw in Georgia, where there was a huge depressed turnout among Republicans because you had Sidney Powell and Lynn Wood saying that they should boycott the election. And this is how we won the Senate. Honest to God, if we can just start more campaigns where we tell Republicans, it's rigged anyway, you don't want to vote, then maybe that's the way we should kind of go in there and just definitely take back the Senate without Joe Manchin. Don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's an interesting, thought. And, you know, again, I remember during that runoff election, you know, them saying boycott the election, which again, I thought was, again, one of the dumbest things, along with the whole thing is rigged kind of stuff, even though, you know, they kept spewing it in public, never brought it into court. And I'm looking forward to the end of these trials where the pillow guy and Leaky Rudy and Sidney Powell and the rest of them have their moment in court where they get sued for, well, everything that they've ever had.
Keep an eye out on Wednesday next week. Jimmy Kimmel has the pillow guy coming on. He's been trolling him. Kimmel has been trolling the pillow guy for weeks. And it's been hilarious. And I am not a huge Kimmel watcher, but that has sort of brought me into watching it because it's so funny. So I don't know what they're going to do, but I guarantee it's going to be funny.
Well, I may have to take a look at that then. And look, I'm waiting for the pillow guy to be the My Prison pillow guy. So we'll see where that goes. But Sarah, as always, good stuff. I hope people will check out the website, rawstory.com. Check out the stuff written by our friend Sarah Burris. We'll make sure we get links out so you can do that. Sarah, as always, fun, entertaining, good talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Good stuff. Our good friend Sarah Burris. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
It's Earth Day.
It's precisely the sort of target that we need to see.
President Biden vows to cut U.S. emissions in half by 2030. European Union and Britain accelerate emissions cuts under the Paris Climate Agreement. Plus,
a lot has happened since we introduced this resolution 2 years ago.
AOC and Senator Markey reintroduced the Green New Deal.
All of those vows, cuts, and reintroductions straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Everything's infrastructure, because infrastructure is the word that sells with voters. And if they're successful in doing that, they will ram this through reconciliation, and suddenly, voila, you have the Green New Deal.
Voila! Who knew? Someone really ought to tell AOC and Senator Markey, who just reintroduced the actual Green New Deal. Yes, but that's just what they want you to think. A cunning misdirection. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, hey, happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you, too. But of course, for us, every day is Earth Day. Since the first Earth Day in 1970, the planet has warmed by more than 1 degree Celsius over pre-industrial levels because of humanity's use of fossil fuels. And that, according to a new report by the World Meteorological Organization, is resulting in relentless intensification of the climate emergency. Last year, the world saw record-breaking extreme weather disasters on nearly every continent, along with accelerating sea level rise and ocean acidification. Solving man-made climate change is the focus of President Joe Biden's 2-day virtual leaders summit on climate, beginning on Earth Day. As we go to air, Biden is set to announce new U.S. emissions targets under the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement to reduce U.S. greenhouse gas emissions by at least 50% below 2005 levels by 2030.
That's half. That's in 9 years, we'll never make it.
We can make it, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And that puts us on the path to his goal of net zero emissions by 2050. That's nearly double the target set under the Obama administration, and achieving it would transform the U.S. economy, generating jobs in decarbonizing electricity, transportation, manufacturing, and building construction, with huge increases in renewable energy deployment across the country.
You mean putting us all out of work so that we either freeze from the cold or die from the heat.
Or put everyone to work, making the U.S. a cleaner and greener place.
Oh, well, there's that.
In an interview with the Green News Report, climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann of Penn State University says Biden's target is in line with what the science indicates is necessary.
It's precisely the sort of target that we need to see. We know that we need to bring down global carbon emissions by a factor of two within the next decade if we're to remain on a course for limiting warming below catastrophic levels, 1.5 degrees Celsius, 3 degrees Fahrenheit. And so what Biden has done here is really up the ante.
I wonder how Ante feels about it.
The details of Biden's plan have not yet been released, but Politico reports the target is designed to be achievable without help from the deeply divided Congress. The new target sends a message that the United States is rejoining the international effort to fight global warming after the climate denial of the Trump administration. This week, the European Union also increased their target, striking a provisional deal on sweeping climate legislation that sets a legally binding target of slashing the EU's net greenhouse gas emissions by 55% by 2030 and achieving net zero emissions by 2050.
Just like us.
The UK also announced a tougher target to cut their emissions 78% compared to 1990 levels by 2035.
Wow.
That would take the UK three quarters of the way to reaching net zero by 2050. Here in the U.S., progressive Democrats are also pushing ahead. Democratic Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York this week reintroduced their Green New Deal framework to ensure that decarbonizing the U.S. economy includes equity and a just transition for working families. And U.S. climate action matters. Climate scientists say that if the world waits until the 2030s to get serious about cutting emissions, then the pace that would be required to meet the Paris Agreement's temperature targets would be very costly and may be technologically impossible. According to Dr. Mann, cutting emissions in half by 2030 is achievable with tools we already have on hand, but setting the target is only the beginning.
The real battle now is going to be over the next couple years. If the Biden administration can use, you know, whatever diplomatic tools it has at its disposal, and Democrats can use whatever parliamentary tools they have at their disposal to pass meaningful climate legislation that can complement the executive actions the administration is taking.
We wish them all luck. Only the fate of humanity hangs in the balance. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Happy Earth Day Green News Report.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, UFOs. Evidently, the U.S. Department of Defense recently confirmed that there's a video from 2019 confirming that there are unidentified flying objects. One looks like a triangle. One looks like a blimp. I think the guy described the other one as an acorn. And that there is actually a military task force called the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force. They've looked at this and who knows? Who knows what it could be? Here to share some thoughts on the aliens that are attacking us, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney. Bob, aliens, Bob, aliens.
Well, you know, Rick, the most asked question in my 11 years in the U.S. Congress from constituents and family and everybody else was, are there aliens? And the day I said I wouldn't run anymore, I was resigning, my staff was downstairs crying in the house. It was a very traumatic moment. And my son walked past me and go, okay, Dad, can you tell me now? Seriously, that's a true story. I'm like, no, I still can't tell you. But I am privy to the fact that they've got some tape from the craft where the aliens took a look around and said, we got to get out of here. we got to get off this planet.
Oh, we got to get away from these people. These people are crazy.
But it is interesting because what the Pentagon said is, because the tape got leaked, and I watched it, and the Pentagon did say that, yes, it was filmed from the carrier, and yes, it's unidentified. They're not saying it's aliens, but they have no idea what it is.
Now, could it possibly be, you know, I don't know, you know, Russian spacecraft? Could it be?
Russians, you know, not, You never know.
Could it be any of that, or could it really be little green men in triangle crowds?
These days, I will never say never. Not on this earth anymore.
Yeah, no kidding. I'd like to believe that there's more intelligent life out there somewhere, because we seem to be going backwards.
Correct.
We'll see where we go. Let's move along. D.C. statehood passed in the House. Gonna go nowhere in the Senate.
Nowhere, and there's some arguments, and I don't know specifically who yet. Although Manchin, we might as well just make it Manchin, the Manchin Senate. Okay,
yes.
Let's just do that. But Senator Manchin from West Virginia, Democratic member, is not sure at this point in time, and. Not pick just on him. There are a couple of other members. And, of course, you and I talked on your show last night. Republican side, they're going to bring in the Joe Lieberman strong arm team, which I don't think will do anything at
all.
Bring
in the closer.
Right. He's going to cut the deal. So, yes, D.C. statehood, unless somebody really puts something together, doesn't look good in the Senate.
No, there's not a snowball's chance of it passing.
No. Doesn't look good.
Nice to talk about, I guess. It gives us something to rally around, I guess,
right.
On a certain level. Never going to happen.
Right.
And I think it should. At the end of the day, I that whole, no taxation without representation, I buy that. I think they should have representation, at least on a certain level.
There's one point that can make this... I guess clarified that would help. One of the thoughts that it can't have, say, forget about it'll have two Democratic members, forget the political side. The public policy side is that, then as a state, it would try to exert control because of the capital. But they can take care of language in there that as a state, it cannot preempt, the U.S. House and Senate.
Right.
They can do that.
No, there's some, my last guest said, how about we just, cut out the capital and give that to the, to the federal government and make the rest of the state, the rest of it a state and let them deal. Because evidently, as she was pointing out, the mayor of D.C. didn't have any power to call up a National Guard or to respond to the crisis that was the insurrection on January 6th. They had to go for other states to bring in their National Guard.
Well, I used to, of course, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton.
Right.
You know her. And I dealt with her extensively, constantly. And I would meet with the mayor in the mayor's office. And I used to do that because House administration was basically linked to D.C. pretty tight about when I promoted the African-American Museum bill for John Lewis. I met with the mayor and we met with the congresswoman to give them due respect, although it's not a state, we're passing things that are going to be within their city.
Right.
So we used to try to at least do as much as we could do. I worked with them pretty closely just to at least, communicate. Then there was a board, of course, that was overseeing every single move that D.C. did by the U.S. Congress governing board.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I mean, the citizens don't have you got to wait for Congress to do everything. And as my last guest pointed out, D.C. was one of the first places to legalize marijuana. Congress completely blocked it, and now all of these other states are passing it and profiting from it. Something that could have helped in their policing, could have helped in their funding. Congress blocks it.
It could also part of it. You could technically place it into the state of Virginia.
Yeah, because now Virginia has signed legalization of marijuana.
You could place D.C. in within the state of Virginia itself.
There's an option. I would prefer it to be its own state.
I know. Yeah, I'm just saying it's always been discussed that would be a secondary option. Maryland would have part, Virginia would have part, and then people at least would be within a state. That had been discussed, but. That's a tough one.
None of that's going anywhere. It's nice that they brought it up. It gets its 20 seconds. Now we can move along. Something we talked about last night, evidently yesterday, Debbie Stabenow, Senator Tammy Baldwin, and, of course, your Senator Sherrod Brown came out with their their Medicare bill to help cover people 50 to 64. This is the Medicare for some, I guess, bill that they've gone forward. I like it. Probably not going to go anywhere, but it's a good thing to throw out there.
Well, right. And again, this would be the Medicare Act at 50 is what they're calling it. And then that would be Medicare basically at you know, 50 years old. You would have your buy-in. You would pay between the ages of 50 and 64 years old. You'd have the option of buying into Medicare. Again, this was originally the brainchild of the Obama administration and was, the process of the public take on this. Of course, with Lieberman, they took it out. The insurance companies really, really hated this one. But I think it was just absolutely brilliant, and it would have helped so many people. So lowering, you know, the Medicare eligibility age would give a lot of people, you know, another option for their health care. And then, again, you pay into the system.
Yep.
So Medicare's been pretty successful, and it would just take it down in age.
And you would get younger people into it, so it's not paying out all the time.
Correct.
And you would help keep it solvent, I think, longer, and give people who, you know, like me, who, you know, may want to retire in the next couple of years, well before I'm 65, mm-hmm. but can't because health insurance costs are just astronomical.
Right.
So that means a younger person who would need the job, you know, much more than I probably would, isn't getting it until I can get to 65.
Right. I mean, I got, I got hit because I wasn't able to get into that system. My coverage was expensive, so 6 months prior to my Medicare, I had a heart attack, and that was obviously very costly. So if the system had been intact, I would have, I'd have been in the system and had been paying, would have had the coverage. I'm not saying that for any sympathy, which I won't get. I'm just saying that I understand that, and many, many, possibly millions of people are in this same type of boat. They're stuck.
I've got sympathy for you. I mean, and you could be one of those guys. I didn't get it, so the heck with the rest of you. So I think it's good that you're going.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Something that we need.
Thanks.
Something else you and I have talked about for a while on the program. Evidently, some of the polling being done by the Republican gurus saying it's time to warm up to working people. Thoughts on that?
Well, this one is very fascinating to watch how the Republicans will walk the razor blade on this one. And I just think you see today with the statements of some GOP senators saying, yes, we're open to corporate tax increases. Probably people said, what? But some key Republicans said they're open to it. You know, the president wants to go from 21 to 28% to pay for infrastructure plans. And Senator Lindsey Graham came out and said, well, I'm willing to do some things on the revenue front. And a couple of other senators came out, and then Senator Mike Braun of Indiana, Republican, said, I believe everybody should pay their fair share. Now, why you're seeing this, and you and I spoke about this probably, I want to say, Rick, what, a month ago or so, there were focus groups and poll groups, and what they do is the gurus get in the room with the Republicans, with, you know, the leaders, and then they say, hey, here's what you have to say, here's what you shouldn't say, and here's what's going on. And what they were doing was a couple-fold effort. One, try to make the Democrats look like they're in the pockets of the corporations. Two, try to, as Republicans, try to separate yourself from those corporations in certain ways, and then appeal to, quote, the working people, which, of course, as we know, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, we've been over this 100 times, those states provided a win to Donald Trump, who took, you know, free trade agreements and beat Hillary Clinton over the head with them.
Yep. I say all the time, focus group tested, think tank approved.
Yes.
They spend lots of money on doing these focus groups. They spend lots of money on think tanks and messaging. And you could see it happening. You could see them, you know, now, especially since a number of these corporations have said, you know, the voting restrictions that Georgia passed were a bit too far. Now this is their pivot point. And it was predictable. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what they're doing. They do telegraph their punches.
Yes, and then on top of it, after the insurrection at the Capitol, some of the business groups said, okay, if you spoke that, you know, the election was fraudulent and, you know, the vice president could do something about this, and we've got to go against it. We're going to cut off the corporate money. So a lot of Republicans lost corporate money, and their way to jab back at the corporations, for some of them, not all of them, McConnell won't do this, but their way to jab back at the corporations is to say, okay, sure, we can raise the taxes. And so you're going to see some of this. And again, I started out by saying walking a razor's edge, because in the end, I don't think the Republicans are really going to go after the corporate world. They'll cut some kind of deal of, hey, why aren't you supporting us? We need support again.
Absolutely. I've been saying that all along. There's the moral indignation that we're seeing, the outrage, feigned at best. Because look, and I said from the beginning, if they really wanted to hurt corporations, go back to the good old days of socialist president Dwight David Eisenhower and a 56% corporate tax rate, not the 28% that Biden's talking about, and certainly not the 35% that it was before the former guy got into office. You were talking about 28%, Joe Manchin 25%. So we're really not talking about taxing corporate America all that much.
Correct. And when you look at what the president has said, you know, about the tax, you know, the loopholes that are out there, and the president has proposed, you know, what he has proposed, they've backed statistics, because the President Biden just showed in a study that he had from an institute that 55 corporations received $3.5 billion in tax rebates.
Yep.
55 corporations, $3.5 billion in tax rebates.
We paid them to exist.
Rebates back. We paid them back.
Yep. We paid them to be in business.
They were on good behavior. They were sharing everything. I'm just kidding.
And that's there were like another, what, 90 plus that had paid no taxes whatsoever.
Right.
There's a problem with that. We've got the highest taxes in the world, Bob. Everyone's taxed higher than everybody all across the globe, and which is nonsense and ludicrous on so many levels. But they say it over and over again.
We're so much lower than Europe.
Yep. And now also on the tax front, you know, it's being whispered now that Biden's potentially going to increase the capital gains tax on people earning $1 million or more, up to 39.6% is what the number has kind of been. Good idea, bad idea, thoughts?
Well, I mean, I think it could be explored, you know, the capital gains tax, as long as they you know, are considerate of, you know, small family farms, for example, to make sure that those aren't viewed as, you know, estates. But I think what the president's trying to say is that it's going to be increasing the capital gains tax for the truly wealthy. And so he'll propose doubling the capital gains tax for wealthy Americans. It'll be, to, I think, 39%?
Yep.
Didn't you say? And they'll have a surtax on investment income. And so investors' tax could be around, you know, 40-some percent for the investors' tax. Of course, we do have to remember something. They always find ways to shield taxes, too. So a lot of the taxes they would have paid every year are shielded, and they get, you know, like the rebates back.
Yep.
So when we really talk about, well, when they cashed in and they've got their profits, they really, you know, the president's trying to take away the profits. Well, they actually, in cases where they got rebates back, this isn't really going to hurt them in the long run anyway.
No, I think Elizabeth Warren's got the right idea, and a wealth tax, because, you know, most capital gains taxes you only pay when you realize the sale of a capital gains, and rich people never sell stock. They borrow against their stock and then write off the interest.
Right.
You know, so, you know, I don't know that it's going to target as many people as you think it is. My view has always been, I want to see a Tobin tax. I want to see a tax on every trade made, a small fraction of a penny on every trade. That will raise a good bit of money. And also a wealth assessment tax on the states over, you know, pick a number, $40 million. That could reap a good bit of windfall into our coffers to pay for the stuff we need. Look, we've for too long allowed the wealthy to shirk their responsibility to society and game the system in ways where we've now created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization. It's now time for them to have to chip in.
Well, look, the wealth gap is a problem, and the average American is paying, you know, what, 28% when you add up the city, the state, the Fed, etc. And you look at the average billionaire, and they aren't paying that 28%.
No, Warren Buffett said. Warren Buffett
said.
Your
listeners are paying. You know.
Yep. Warren Buffett said he pays his secretary pays a higher rate than he does. And hey, look, it's class war, and his class is winning, but they shouldn't be. That's one of our billionaires talking.
Right. Yeah. Warren Buffett's been honest about, a lot of these things, I think.
Yeah. Sadly, I see what we've got going on in the Senate right now, and nothing of progress is going to get done, and it's dangerous to me. Last question I've got for you. Pelosi is talking about a commission to focus only on the insurrection. I know the Republicans want to have all the Black Lives Matter and Antifa stuff. You think she's going to be able to get what she wants?
Well, yes, she can do it in several ways. For example, if it doesn't come to a vote, they can have the commission themselves internally through the House Administration Committee. Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, I used to chair that committee. She was actually a member when she first came into the House on my committee. And that committee, through the Speaker, can go ahead and, can do it without an actual vote of the floor. If they want to have a commission, that committee itself can explore it and would have the ability to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
and they can appropriate the money to do it to themselves.
Yeah, I mean, there's the talk that, Nancy Pelosi wants to be bipartisan. And there's talk of, even numbers in the committee so no one has more power than the other, equal subpoena power. And it seems like she wants to try and make this as nonpartisan as possible, and yet you're still going to get the Jim Jordans of the world going, no, it's Antifa.
Right. Well, yeah, in her statement, she had wanted to, yes, it's true. She had wanted to be bipartisan. She wanted to have, a commission that would focus on the insurrection. Of course, then everybody wants to add everything else in. The Capitol was not attacked by any other group.
Right.
Look, if a group protested the Capitol, let's say some of the groups before the insurrection, let's say they were going to lead towards some violence or there was some violence out there somewhere, et cetera. They did not come in the Capitol. They did not storm the Capitol. People did not die. And this is a fact. So the insurrection is what you have to focus on because that is where the Capitol was invaded.
Absolutely.
I mean, the Speaker is 100% correct on that. But as far as the bipartisan part, if it doesn't come to a vote, again, I think they have the power to just say, okay, House Administration is going to go ahead and look at this, and it's a committee. The House Administration, by the way, is 6-3. It's designed that way. The majority party has 6 votes. The minority party has 3 votes. That's the way it's designed. Doesn't mean it's always a battle in that committee. Nowadays it will be, but doesn't mean it always was in the past. And a lot of tough issues were tackled. They can tackle it there.
Yeah, it's something that we absolutely need to do.
Sure.
But, Bob, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you, my friend.
Thank you. You too.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Ney. No, seriously, I there has to be an investigation into this. And I know the Republicans want to muddy the waters in this. For me, it's all about January 6th. That's where they built the gallows. That's where they were chanting, hang Mike Pence. That's where they defecated on the floor of our Capitol building and took a leak on people's desks and desecrated our Capitol. And I've had people say, well, no. You see, you're missing it. That's the people's house. Yes, it is. Until you break into it and you start tearing it up and you start talking about hanging the people who are in there. There's a serious problem with that. And I'm hoping that with some of the trials and some of the guilty pleas that are coming, it goes up the ladder and who was responsible for all this. And the moneyed interests that funded it. For me, on January 6th, I was saying, I want to know who funded this. I want to know the people who are behind the curtain. We see the doofuses and the idiots who are running around looking like clowns in our Capitol and doing dumb stuff. We see them. They're just the puppets. They're the pawns in this game. I want the queens and kings. I want the oligarchs. I want the moneyed interests who made this happen. Who made this possible, who funded all of these groups to whip these people into a frenzy to where they were willing to go out of their fairly comfortable lives. Because a lot of the people that you've seen arrested, were doing okay. They were doing fairly well a very solidly middle-class existence for a good number of them. And they were willing to throw all that away and have their lives completely disrupted because they bought what was being shoveled to them. They were swallowing the giant piles of you-know-what that was being shoved down their throat by the Fox Newses and the AONs and the Newsmaxes and all of those other sources. And all of the conspiracy theories and all of the misinformation and all of the propaganda, they bought it. Hook, line, sinker. And now you've got people who are just trying to brush it under the rug. We need a full comprehensive investigation to find out who did what, when, and why. And if it rises to the level of the former guy having anything to do with it, or his campaign having anything to do with it, heads should roll and people should go to jail. That's simple. We used to believe in this country in accountability. We used to believe that if you broke the law, you committed an act of treason, that you should be held accountable. Just because we're getting further away from January 6th doesn't mean what happened on that day is any less horrible and any less illegal. And I'm hoping for good long jail sentences for the people who did organize this and did put it all together and did execute what was a military operation. Just that simple. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, you can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
What if we took Monopoly out of our daily diets? Busting the power of abusive and arrogant food monopolists would be of such immediate benefit to the bottom lines of farmers, consumers, and workers that even middle-of-the-road congressional Democrats and a few Republicans are turning into Rooseveltian trust busters. New Jersey Senator Cory Booker, for example, usually a reliable defender of corporate interests, sees the connection between inner-city food deprivation and the consolidation of power by industrial farm and food profiteers, which, he says, are contrary to our very idea of farming in our country. Working with progressive grassroots groups like Food and Water Action and Family Farm Action, Booker is sponsoring the Farm System Reform Act, a comprehensive proposal to overhaul major parts of the broken food structure. Included in his bill are strong overdue provisions to phase out the monstrous system of CAFOs, confined animal feeding operations, that are torturous hellholes for thousands of chickens, hogs, and other animals caged in each of these huge factories, which are also polluters of water, air, and rural communities. Rather than conventional liberal programs to treat the symptoms of monopoly, such progressive populist approaches begin to dismantle monopoly, and they represent our best chance of actually making life fairer for the majority of people. The good news is that much of the power to do this already exists. As investigative reporter Amy Swan writes in the January Washington Monthly, we don't have to wait on recalcitrant Republicans and weak-kneed Dems in Congress to make progress. A tool shed of laws that were put in place during the past 100 years to counter monopoly power are still on the books. They're stored in the Ag Department, SEC, Justice Department, and many other drawers of public power. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's put them to work. The Hightower Radio Lowdown is made possible by you lowdowners who subscribe to our monthly newsletter, The Hightower Lowdown. You know who you are. Thank you.